Protesters are out there, and sometimes they might show up to your protest or march. How can organizers plan for a safe and successful demonstration, and how can you de-escalate sketchy situations?
Welcome to Climate Organizing Shorts, where we're having short but inspiring conversations with climate organizers to help give you ideas for how you can build momentum for change in your community.
Climate Organizing Shorts is a collaboration between Pullback Podcast and the Climate Justice Organizing Hub. I'm Kylie Hewson, and I'm here with Kristen Pugh.
On today's episode, we spoke with Edmonton-based climate and social justice activist Robert Miller about de-escalation. Robert has done a lot of great work planning protests and training volunteers in things like de-escalation. And he has some really practical tips for both organizers and first-time marshals.
Let's go.
My name is Robbie. I'm a climate activist from Edmonton, Miskatchewaskahiagan. I got involved in street activism in about 2017, 2018, and I actually got my start in anti-fascist organizing here in Edmonton, dealing with violent white supremacists and extremists, which is pretty much most of the terrible people that you're going to encounter as a climate protester. There is a lot of overlap. I've also been a marshal for a lot of different protests, climate strikes here in Edmonton through XR and Climate Justice Edmonton. We were part of the team that brought Greta Thunberg to Edmonton and nothing bad happened. And I've actually done de-escalation trainings for activists before, so I have some little tips and tricks for what you can use to kind of deal with counter-protesters in particular.
Do you have any strong memories that come to mind about like counter-protesters you've encountered or especially weird de-escalation situations?
Quite recently, I was actually involved in marshaling for a Palestinian liberation rally. And there were two things that kind of like highlighted that are a little bit more unusual, but really stick out in my mind. And the first one is just like, know your community. One of the realities of working in our current like moment of neoliberal hell is that a lot of the people that you're going to encounter who are going to cause a scene at a rally, especially in the downtown, are probably just homeless. They are people who are probably going to be quite like agitated by large crowds who are shouting and chanting. They don't know what's going on, but they are probably pretty stressed out about it. And so it really helps, like if you are planning on doing protests downtown, to focus not just having a marshal team that's like security minded, but mostly focused about just kind of like helping people understand what's happening. And that's all that it takes to de-escalate. Like a lot of the people that you're going to be encountering are not counter-protesters. They're just people who would be shouty and yelly anyways that your protest is happening to come across. And then the other one was possibly one of the funniest marshalling experiences I've ever had, which is that a young guy and an old guy got into an argument about the nature of God, completely unrelated to the protest. The old man just said something that the young guy thought blasphemed against God. And so they were having this little theological debate. And so this guy runs up to me being like, oh, there's a bunch of people like arguing. There's like a big dispute or like a fight about to break out. So, you know, me and my buddy, we hustle over there. We're like, this is just two guys yelling at each other. You know, that's totally normal. So we ask them what's going on because they're both shouting in Arabic. And then we were like, oh, this is totally fine. This is just like two guys having a day. And so a lot of your role as a marshal is not about like de-escalating people. It was actually just, I turned my back on the two guys and I'm just there to prevent protesters from rubbernecking. I do want to talk about de-escalating people who are like actually there to be disruptive. But most of the time when you are a marshal, I think it's really damaging to your movements and also to your own sort of like enjoyment of what's going on to think of yourself as like a security guard for the protest. The reason why those two examples really jump out at me and the reason why I like talking about them is because at no point did I need to pretend to be a police officer or worry about the security of the protest. It's not your job as a marshal. Most of your job as a marshal is just like helping people get along, making sure that protesters aren't rubbernecking around like little weird things that are happening on the sidelines of your protest. One of the other really fun things that has happened to me was like helping children who have been separated from their parents, giving water bottles to people who didn't bring any. These are your actual roles as marshals. And as we get into like the more like nitty gritty of de-escalation, I really want to like make sure that people are focusing on that.
I'm curious from two perspectives. One is sort of like, for somebody who might be like about to take on a role as a marshal for the first time, if you could maybe talk about what that role is. And then sort of the second layer is for somebody who's organizing a protest what should they think about in terms of setting up marshals and, you know, training them?
Most of marshalling is just going to be being a friendly face and helping people with like very like odd little things that are happening along the sidelines. Most of what you're going to be doing is just thanking motorists for their patience as you block intersections, helping to answer questions that people have about the route, and then also just making sure that people don't rubberneck when like you pass by one of the hate preachers that are becoming more common, or there's homeless people having a dispute, or people arguing about God, or some guy who doesn't like you flipping you off and telling you, is like, ah, stop blocking traffic. Probably you are not going to have to do anything particularly like security focused. That's kind of what you have to keep in mind as well as an organizer when you're looking at marshalling plans. One of the things that I really recommend is to kind of make a low numbers scenario, your target number scenario, and then like what happens if you're way more successful than you thought you would be? And think about how many people that's going to mean in terms of city blocks. So it's like if you are going and moving out onto a road, how many marshals are you going to need is largely going to be dependent on how many intersections do you have to block simultaneously. Because you want at least one person in every lane of traffic that's going to cross through that intersection. And you have to keep in mind that like there's going to be turning lanes that you need to cover that aren't necessarily things you might think about normally. And also that there's going to be alleyways, especially if you're going through downtown, and you also definitely want to be covering those. One of the things that I really recommend is never leaving open traffic lanes in the direction that you're going. So if you're on like a two-lane road in each direction, plan to take both lanes. If it's three lanes, plan to take all three. The most dangerous situations that I've ever encountered as a protest marshal is largely where organizers have tried to like let traffic sneak by on the side. Oh God, it gets really messy. People speed, they drive close to you really dangerously to kind of like intimidate you and be like, get out of the fucking road. That's kind of what your marshalling plan should look for. Look at your route, determine in a low case, target case, and high turnout scenario, how many people are going to fit. Usually it's about like, I'd say about 500 or 600 people can fill up a block with two lanes of traffic. If you're less than that, you probably don't need all that many marshals because you're only going to be taking two intersections in an alleyway. But if you're looking at like 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, you're going to have to start thinking about how many marshals you're going to need. And then in addition to traffic control, add some extra marshals for people to be at the front, people to be on the sides, and people to be at the back. And one of the things that I also really recommend for organizers from my experience is figure out some kind of system for making sure that the people in the back are communicating to the people in the front. I find that one of the really challenging things for a lot of organizers has been recognizing that there are people with mobility concerns who are going to lag behind at the back, whether that's children, whether that's people in wheelchairs, whether that's the elderly. There's going to be lots of people who are not going to be able to walk as fast as the people at the front. And I often find that protests get really stretched out. So you need some kind of mechanism. A really low-tech one is actually using a rally system. So basically, your marshals become your ruler. So a marshal can't leave their spot until a marshal has come to relieve them. And so if you only have enough marshals to take a certain number of roads, then if you don't have the marshals to take the next intersection, because they're still at the intersection behind you waiting to be relieved, you know, okay, we just have to like wait here and chant and like, you know, maybe do a speech or something while the rest of the protest catches up. You can also use more high-tech systems like walkie-talkies, group chats that people are specifically, their only job is communicating to each other through this group chat. Another really low-tech one is just to have bike riders. And basically their entire job is going to be going from the front to the back, to the front, to the back, to the front, to the back, to the front, to the back, just to sort of like tell the organizers at the front, hey, we're getting really stretched out. Super important, very underrated.
Let's maybe talk about de-escalation a little bit now. What are your broad pieces of advice for de-escalating anybody?
The first thing that I actually recommend is to do some container building as a marshal team. One of the things that I find really interesting about doing de-escalation trainings is when you talk to people about like, what does violence look like to you? People will actually have a pretty large variety of answers. And you really get a good idea for who's on your marshal team in terms of their experience, because like, some of that violence can be interpersonal. When people think about like, how would you stop a fight, especially, is like a really good question to ask people. Because you will get people who are like, I actually have no idea how to stop a fight. I've never been in one. You will have other people who are like, I'm going to start throwing hands and like wrestle them to the ground. And then there's other people that are going to talk about like using voice and de-escalation. And it gives you that ability to kind of like gauge where your team is at. Another important question is to ask like, what are your triggers? Like, what are your experiences with people yelling at you, and how have you responded to that in the past? Because it's very hard, actually, to be yelled at if you've never been yelled at before. It's quite unpleasant. And just like recognizing that, like, some people don't have good experience with that. Like, if you haven't worked a lot in customer service, you probably haven't been yelled at a bunch. But like, it can also be quite different for people if they like come from homes where screaming and yelling was common and there's actual like associations of trauma and stuff like that. So making sure that you're sort of like internally understanding, like, how am I going to respond to the situation? In terms of the actual like de-escalation practice, you want to demonstrate how you think that person should be behaving back to them. So the number one most important thing to de-escalate someone is to be calm yourself, or at least to present calmness to them. So you want to make sure that you're keeping your voice low, calm. As soon as you start raising your voice, they are going to start raising their voice as well. And then you are going to become a part of that escalation cycle. That's one of the most important things to think about, is that there are no magic words. There's no negotiation with someone who's really escalated at a protest. The only way that you are not going to be participating in that escalatory cycle is if you are consciously taking yourself out of it. Go slow, talk slow. One of the things that's really important when you start thinking about de-escalation as a team then is also to recognize that same thing. Someone is going to get really, really agitated if they've got like six people talking to them. So you want to make sure that you have one-on-one conversations as much and as often as you can, but recognizing that you don't have to stay in that conversation. If you've got six marshals who are available to deal with a counter-protester or deal with someone who's agitated, tap out with one another. The other five people can turn their backs, they can look away, they can just stand there silently supporting you. And as soon as you start to feel like you're like, I can't maintain my calm anymore, you tap out, cycle in. And then when we're thinking about working as a team within a larger protest, the most important tip that I find is that you're mostly going to be focusing on preventing people in the protest from joining in. Because again, you want to try and maintain as much of a barrier between them and like anything that's going to cause them to be agitated. So one of the other really important things for other members of that team to be doing is just managing the people in your own protest, being like, hey, we've got everything under control. Keep on moving. You have to maintain that like calm level communication also with people in the protest. Those are kind of like the basic principle for de-escalation. Understand what you need to do to be calm, present that calmness to the person that you're talking to, and then make sure that nobody else in that situation is like piling on. And this works whether you're de-escalating a protest, whether you're de-escalating somebody at work. I also find that it's really helpful in like medical emergencies too. It's just like a general kind of practice of keeping people out of it.
I think you're totally right. That's really good general advice. And probably in like 95% of situations is going to work. But what about those like few situations where it maybe has already escalated to a point where maybe people are getting physical a little bit? What then would you do?
So one of the things that I think is really noxious is oftentimes people doing peace policing. Like if you are at a protest and someone is getting violent and there are people in your crowd who are willing to like throw hands as well and do like a little scrap on the side, a little tilly, as it were. Do not get involved. Try to stop anyone else from getting involved and just kind of section it off, cordon it off, and get people moving and keeping through. Obviously, like be prepared to like provide any kind of like medical assistance. The practices that I find really useful are to kind of like mobilize people together, because if de-escalation has broken down and you're no longer able to have like a one-on-one conversation with someone to get them to kind of like stop being disruptive, the easiest thing to do is to kind of do like a Red Rover line, get people together in like a Red Rover line so their arms are linked together so they can't be pushed around. And then you're just going to push that person with that Red Rover line. Things that really help are maintaining chants all the way through, anything that's going to keep people's spirits up. And you're just going to kind of like push them out and make sure that they can't get into the protest and cause other weird stuff or like start to hurt people that are inside of it. The main thing to think about when you're doing that Red Rover line, though, is just to make sure that they do have an out. Other things that can really help for this, especially if they've got like obnoxious signs or if they have video cameras, is like having either umbrellas, banners, or your signs of your own. Prevent them from filming as much as you can.
Okay, so I think those were really useful tips for sort of general de-escalation, which, as you mentioned at the beginning, is kind of, in a lot of cases, the situations you're going to be in. But sometimes there will be protests where there's maybe one or more than one deliberate counter-protesters that show up. Can you paint a picture for some of the like varieties of counter-protesters that are out there people might encounter?
Even in Edmonton, which is like oil country, usually you're not going to encounter extremely large counter-protest groups. And so usually you can just kind of like overwhelm them, move around them. The best way to deal with counter-protests is to just make them look sad. If you have the numbers again, you really can just ignore them. The only situations where it really starts to get dicey is when they outnumber you, in which case it's probably a good idea to just go home. Ultimately, like if you do need to rely on violence, especially as a progressive, the police are going to crack down on you way harder than they are going to crack down on right-wing counter-protesters that engage in violence. This is true in every single protest I've ever been in. You really do just have to rely on numbers, and you do just have to rely on the fact that you're correct, you are popular, you are able to bring out a lot of people and just dwarf them, make fun of them. It's really great. Like if you've got people who are comedians or actors, like put them on a megaphone, because ultimately, like if they can't have fun, but you can, you will continue to bring out the numbers and they will dwindle and disappear.
There is a bit of a fine line that I think you're walking here, right? Because we talked about de-escalating at the beginning, but you've also seemed to suggest that poking a little bit of fun can have its place. So like, how do you sort of know when you might be going too far or when to maybe pull back on that a little bit?
I think this is part of container building for your movement as well. This has been very different between all of the different groups that I've been a part of. With a lot of anti-fascist organizing, like, you know, people are more than willing to just like go all in to make fun of these people. We have had people just hang their head in shame and leave before. I should tell you about the Battle of the Bulk Barn, which is possibly one of the funniest rallies that I've ever been a part of. There were some right-wing extremists who were planning on protesting outside of the constituency office of Rachel Notley, who is the NDP leader here in Alberta. We found out about it, and we just got there before them. And so we took the side of the street that the constituency office was on. And we had enough people in front of the constituency office that as they started to arrive, they did not feel safe trying to like take the sidewalk from us. So they started to gather on the other sidewalk across the street, which is in front of a bulk barn. And so they held their little protest in front of the bulk barn. And we just mocked them relentlessly for this. And then, yeah, they all went home and were very sad about it. I guess this is also a good tip for if you're dealing with counter-protesters and you know you're going to deal with counter-protesters, if you can get into their planning and like arrive before they do, just take the space. For a lot of climate rallies, we haven't really focused on the counter-protesters at all. Like we literally just chant climate slogans at them until they realize that they're not going to stop us and they go home.
I like the idea that it's sort of like a Little Rascals approach. Like you're not bringing the anger or the hate, but definitely a little mischief.
A little mischief is fine. And again, container building. Maybe for your movement, a little bit of shenanigans are not in the cards. You can make that decision as an organizer. There is no manual for doing this. There is no one way to win a better future. Try something different.
Is there ever a situation where you would like engage in an actual argument with a counter-protester, or is that always a bad idea?
There's only one situation where it is ever useful, and that is if there is a camera. And so you're not in an argument with the person. You are just using this opportunity to put out your talking points. Media loves a little, they love the conflict. It gets views and it gets clicks, but you don't have to engage in it. That's the only time when an argument is worthwhile. If you are dealing with someone who has escalated and you're trying to just like talk to them, don't engage with what they're saying. You are not a debater. You're not going to de-escalate them by debating their arguments. Get them to think about the moment that they are in and just try to focus on like bringing them down to like talk about something pleasant, or just not engage with them at all and just keep on repeating over and over and over again. Like, thank you. I appreciate the feedback, but it's like, I've got 2,000 people that are going to be moving through this road over the next half an hour. I cannot stop them. You cannot stop them. Let's find a way to like make this work for both of us.
Is that why most like counter-protesters show up in your experience? Is that they're hoping to stop the protest, or are they just there to shout at the world? What's the rationale?
They're mostly there to shout at the world. It's pretty rare that I encounter situations where they're trying to stop you. If you are doing a march specifically, one of the things that's very important to note is that you are always on the move. And so you don't have to particularly defend a territory or anything like that. If someone is trying to like block you, you can just go around them in a lot of cases. But also that it's like you can just flow through them as well. Oftentimes, like if they're not able to completely block the street that you're wanting to go through, which they very often are not able to, you can really ignore them and just focus on you're not like protecting anything other than the people that are moving through. That gets very different if you're trying to do a blockade. The de-escalation gets way more complicated if you are actually like, no, I do actually have to prevent this person from getting into this space. But that would be a very, very different episode and one that I don't feel as confident talking about because it's incredibly challenging. So something to think about if you're planning a blockade.
I like that several of these tactics are just like schoolyard hijinks.
You can play and have fun. Is probably the most important part about planning around counter-protest and marshalling. One of the most effective counter-protests that I've ever done, for instance, was we had a dance party. When I talk about like making fun of them and making them feel like sad, you also don't have to be mean to them. You can just be having a lot of fun. And then they're sitting there being like, oh, we're grumbling about, you know, white replacement theory or some other nonsense. And meanwhile, these people are having a gay dance party having a great time. It's demoralizing for them. Just have fun and be creative. You do not have to be a super serious revolutionary. You can just be someone who is out mobilizing people who agree with you, who want to see this change as well. The best way to do that is to have fun and don't get too bogged down in like doing it the right way. Just do it.
If Robert's work piqued your interest, you can join Climate Justice Edmonton or a similar organization where you live.
And if you do want to learn more about the Climate Justice Organizing Hub and the work that they do, check out their wiki, which provides information and resources for activists in the climate justice movement.
The wiki is a really excellent tool for information on all sorts of topics related to climate justice. Topics like accessibility, burnout and care, movement structure, recruitment and retention, student organizing, and more. You can find a link to the wiki in the show notes or visit lehub.ca.